You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Well, actually, you got to do more than troll on in. You got to come in to get a whole bunch of stuff. As you know, in the last couple of weeks, we've been talking about the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council meeting. This was a 172nd meeting. It's pretty interesting because it's not 172nd years. It's like 40 years, but it meets at least three times a year, sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. But the interesting thing is what comes out of it. And Josh Jamello is here. He's a fisheries analyst, as you know, and he's the one that is the driving force for me to get all of the wonderful guests we do to do our segments for the council, which, as you know, are a full sponsor of our program. So I was, once again, very, very pleased to be part of the program. I usually am the MC and the moderator of a panel. This time I was the MC, but I wasn't the moderator of the panel because I was on the doggone panel. And it was kind of an interesting experience. And I thought that Josh Jamello and I could sort of spend a little time on that. First of all, it was breaking new ground, right?
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. We had over 100 people showing up to just listen to journalists talk about
surprise. You know, we often complain on this program, and certainly I know around the tables at the that you guys get very disappointed, as do I, when somebody doesn't get it or incorrectly or just twists the story to make the fishery look bad. It hurts all of us.
And I think a lot of it is not necessarily that they're trying to make it look bad. It's they're really reporting to what their audience is reacting to.
Yeah. And also sometimes, and this is unfortunate, you have to consider the source. I mean, you know, you might say that these guys are left-wing, these guys are right-wing, these guys are moderate, and that is true. If you have a left-wing person that goes in to write a story, it's going to be with the left-wing bent. So really what you need to do is look at all stories, right? That's what came out. What I got out of that is, okay, you may not like something I wrote in Hawaii Boats and Yachts or that Nathan Eagle wrote in Cybill Beat or that, Catherine Cruz did on public radio, but, you know, we all sat around the same table and there were no fistfights.
Right. So I think the main thing that they were trying to say is that this is our story. Yeah. And if you want to find out more information, go out and look for other things that might provide that other side of the story.
The thing that I enjoyed about it the most was, first of all, I knew all these people, but we've never all been in one room together. And, you know, I had to make a remark in the very beginning. Catherine Cruz and Paula Khan and I, we worked together at KITV 30 years ago. Wow. And, you know, and we really never were at a meeting like this before where we were the subject. Were you surprised at some of the directness and some of the really informed questions that we got from the audience? Because we were.
Oh, the audience, they came prepared, I think, for this because they were really concerned on what's being portrayed about fishing in the news. And so when they asked questions, they really stuck to that point of fair and balance that they want to see in their news.
Yeah, and you know, that was the other side of it. And one of the specific things that came up, one of the people from the media that was invited that was not able to attend wrote some questionable stuff about one of the longline boats that went aground, the Pacific Paradise, it was called, went aground on the reef. Wasn't it interesting to see some of the other people, not just me, saying, you know, a month into the story was not anymore anything to do with, you know, who are the people on that ship? It was just, how do we get the thing off the reef? But every single story, that last half of the story was a misinformed opinion of what these fishermen were or are.
And you see that with a lot of the news articles today. I mean, look at the Hawaii missile blunder that went on. It's still going on. Yeah. It's like three months later. Mm-hmm. So it's what we really found out was really what is the audience clamoring for? What's paying the bills? Because that's what they're going to report on.
Well, the thing that I got from that was most of us in this day and age, because of the economy and everything else, we vote with our wallets. You know, whether it's buying fish or going to a restaurant or buying a magazine or buying fishing equipment, the four words that we always hear are, how much is it? And I think that a lot of the stories that we're talking about, that was the underlying thing. It wasn't about, you know, illegal this or illegal that. It was about, okay, what's affecting the price of the food that we're putting on our table?
that and, you know, the habitat, what is it doing to the reefs out there? I mean, there's guys that go out there surfing, guys that go out there diving, especially this year. It's an open year. So what other things are going on? I mean, it's such a small component of the story, but it's blown up to something bigger.
I was actually glad, and I think what you're getting at is that some of the stories that were written, instead of blaming the fishermen or the fleet or this or that, they did say, you know, this isn't the same as it was because there was a massive runoff or there was a massive something interrupting the environment or damaging the reef, that it wasn't man-made or not to say man-made, but it wasn't fisherman-made.
Right, and there's a lot of effort to correct that now, even with the reauthorization of the Magnuson Act in Congress. They're looking at putting in the word depleted instead of overfished, because just because a fish isn't as plentiful as it was before doesn't mean it was fishing that was the cause.
Yeah, that's really good, and that's exactly right. And one of the things that did come out of that meeting, folks, and I'll remind you who they were. Kerry Johnson from Hawaii Fishing News was there along with Stan Wright, you know, Stan Wright Photography, big part of Let's Go Fishing with Harry Guchima, and even Bruce Carter before that, really into the bass fishery and all of that. Catherine Cruz from Public Radio, she used to be at KITV as a anchor and a reporter, but she now is doing, she is the, I think, news director up there at Public Radio, and me from AM 690, FM 94.3, you're listening to, and also as a writer for the writing I do in Hawaii Boats and Yachts. And we were monitored by and moderated by Paul Alcana, who's been sitting in the anchor chair for many, many years and has seen all of these stories. So I don't want to call it the movers and the shakers, but in some respects it was. And that's why we were so glad to see the audience not only respectful of everybody who was up there on the podium, but really asking some give me the scoop, investigative questions.
Well, and there's also Dean Sensui, the producer for Hawaii Goes Fishing, and Nathan Eagle, who writes for Civil Beat for the environment section. But I think a lot of it is they got to see who these people are.
Exactly.
Because you read their stuff online or they're sharing it on Facebook, and they watch the TV shows or listen to the radio, and then they're actually real people that they can actually converse with.
By the way, talk about Dean for a minute. He's the first to tell you that he hides behind the camera. He's rarely on the other side of it. You know, that's by his choice. But he says the camera sort of sees it all. And that's why we were talking about when we shared how stock assessment were made. Because remember, he was on the cutting edge of that, putting those GoPro cameras into the ocean to find out, you know, in a point in time where the fish aren't get spooky when they see somebody with fins and splashing around. When they're just a static camera, the fish act differently.
Right. And so he does a lot that people don't know about, but his show is a reflection of what he does. So it's good to know who those people are as well.
Yeah, I thought that true. And there's another thing everybody knows. Kerry Johnson is the daughter of Chuck Johnson, the founder of Hawaii Fishing News. And Chuck is, you know, looking at saying, I might have had enough of this. And actually, she was actually there with kind of jet lag. She came virtually right off a plane to be at that thing.
Right. And we didn't just have the panel. We also had informational booths that included the Coast Guard, National Fisheries Service, Hawaii Alliance for Science, Pacific Island Fisheries Group, Conservation International, the Waipio Community Baptist Church, the Seafarers Ministry, the Council, and Hawaii Fishing News. So she's kind of doing double duty that night.
But you know what I think is interesting? You're right. She had a great booth, and they had great back copies. And they are the Bible. They're the record keepers. I wouldn't know what to do without them. And there's also a lot of stimulating stuff. And you know, to be quite honest, what we can do here on the radio pales in comparison as what you can do when you're writing something, but you still have to get it. And they're able to go into some of these things in a little bit more depth. As is Public Radio, by the way. Catherine Cruz and what they do there is, and Cybill Beat. They can actually go into things at more depth because their readers or their listeners are there because that's what they want. They want the longer form, not just sound bites.
Right, and some people are looking for those in-depth articles, and you get it pretty much get it with a lot of these guys, because you go to the news stations and they put out little articles all throughout the day,
sure.
And then you read a little bit on it, but you want to know more. Yeah. So it's always good to have those folks that put out more information.
That's why we love this program, because what we're able to do is that. And now the other question that always comes up, and somebody asked me this after they heard our show last week, that it looks like an awful lot of extra work to put on these forums. They're at the end of the day when everybody in the council and everybody, all of the attendees, are working all day long from breakfast right through. And I was, you know, I mentioned every time, and I did this last time, to give everybody on the council and all of the stakeholders applause, because it was at the end of a pretty long day already, huh? And then we had to crank it back up from 6:30 until 9:30 that night.
Right. Yeah. So it's part of the 172nd meeting of the council, which is held for 3 days, and that was the end of the first day.
Mm-hmm.
And so most of the staff had to leave, and there was two staff left to staff the meeting. And I was one of the ones left behind. And so we had to finish our agenda and do all the notes and all that other stuff until we got to break at 5:45, and we had to run down over to the Dole Cannery to do that.
But Josh, there is a reason to the madness, because one of the things that we often talk about, and we talked about it at the meeting, and we've also talked about it on this program, and I've talked about it in writing a lot, and that is, when you talk about bottoms up, isn't it sort of, even though it's extra expense and a big humbug, isn't that part of the fact-finding effort that the council makes to measure a lot of the decisions that you have to make on?
So the Fishers Forum actually started as a way for us to get additional comments on actions that the council was going to be taking during that council meeting. So it gave, because not everyone can come to the meeting, because meetings are during the day, people work during the day. We've tried doing it at night. People still can't make it at certain nights.
Yeah.
But so we gave a 1 day or one evening to listen to what we have going on with the council, and then they could provide public comments. It started at the down in Kaka'ako, but we started moving it around as we had different meetings.
It's good fun. The Pōmaikai is a great place to do that.
It's perfect. Yeah. It has space. It has the parking.
Yeah.
It's sort of centralized, not too far from the meeting.
What one of the reasons why? And by the way, I had so much fun in giving away stuff, because there's been so many donors. POP, Hawaii Skin Diver, Hawaii Fishing News, Stan Wright Photography. He brought some really cool stuff. We had some gift certificates to POP. We had stuff from Nico's. It was, I don't want to say incentive laden, but there was a pretty good reason. If people came there, and wasn't there, isn't it like parting gifts? Every booth had really great information. I saw people that were taking it for their kids, and I really liked that.
I think that's one of the best parts. It's a family event.
Yeah.
And it's free. So if you're looking for something to do, and especially we were getting into the spring break, so finding stuff for the kids to do was important.
You know, there were in it, and there were some newcomers at the booths. I particularly like it when the Coast Guard shows up, and you can't help but think about this, and I know that this is a big part of the fishery issues. A lot of times that most of us that are offshore trawlers, anyway, we look for what we call rubbish. Oh, rubbish, go, that means fish. Josh and I were talking off the air about that garbage patch that's out there in the middle of the Pacific, and one guy said, you know what? You can look at this in two things. This is big as the state of Texas, maybe even bigger than that. It's huge. Can you imagine the food chain that's there? I mean, you know, all of this stuff floating around is—it's shade, it's housing, it's a lot of things. There's a lot of fish around that rubbish.
Yeah, there's been a lot of things in the news about all these nets that have been washing up on shore
in Hawaii.
When they're out there, the fishermen are taking advantage of it because it houses all. It has the algae that brings the small fish, that bring the bigger fish, and then even bigger fish.
Yeah, they call it a garbage patch. And they're now saying it is twice the size of Texas, and it's growing. None of us really understand that. Anybody listening to the program right now, unless they're in Texas, and Texas used to be, oh, yeah, there's no place as big as Texas, and then there's Alaska. But this thing is absolutely frightening. And doesn't it show that it is not necessarily in a populated area? This is actually coming together on the currents literally from the entire Pacific.
And it's up there in the North Pacific, the Western North Pacific, and it's just floating around in circles. And it comes from all over the world. It comes from comes from people throwing stuff off, just things blowing off the land. It's really just a big sink for
it's
for
actually all that it's actually trash. it's an embarrassment to most of us to realize that that's how we have mismanaged ourselves for so long, right? I mean, this stuff shouldn't be there.
Oh, and imagine what it was like before all the trash was there. Yeah. How because of all the currents and how the oceanography works, it might have been like a really great place for some kind of spawning or something else that would be going on.
But, you know, I got a kick out of it because there was one little kid that said, you know, why don't we just burn it? And, you know, when you think about it, well, it's because it's in water, and water and doesn't exactly burn. But there are now processes where you could go alongside of something like that and burn it. But when you think, when you say it's as big as the size of Texas or twice as big as Texas, how big of a boat are you going to have? I mean, there's no way to take that apart.
And where are you going to put it?
Yeah.
I mean, if you go and collect it, you can burn it, but it's all plastics are made from petroleum, so it's probably not good for the air either.
The dilemma would be, the challenge would be to a lot of our young people is, okay, this is what we made. Now you guys go and fix it. Figure out a way to deal with this thing.
I think that's the millennial challenge that, you know, we wanted to leave something better, but millennials are saying better. And then what are we doing? You're blaming us that we don't want to do anything. And look, you haven't done anything.
But okay, the way that doubles back is to what Josh and I were talking about, and Josh DeMello is a fisheries analyst with the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council, and today's discussion is a recap of the 172nd meeting of the council, and this fisheries forum that we've done that sort of completes the cycle. It does give us some examples of when you talk, and I want to return to what you said before, it was a depleted. Isn't science able to look at stocks now and say, you know, what you may have thought was decimation and, you know, extinction before really isn't? That there's more than we think of. What we need to do is figure out ways to maybe manage it but allow more catching, because what we're going to talk about next year, my friends, is this wasn't part of the meeting. But this certainly is a point right now where we are taking a look at how safe is all of the seafood that we're importing that come from countries, Josh, that don't monitor quality like we do here?
So I think to the first point, it's really there's a lot of doom and gloom that's going on because people are just looking at the data and saying, hey, there's no fish and we're not going to have fish by 2030 or by 2040 or 2300 now, is the number that's being thrown around. But really, the fishermen on the water know if there's fish or not. And at some point, people are going to stop fishing if there's no fishing. If there's no fish to catch, you're just wasting gas and wasting your time.
So that means that you're going to have to be more skilled and go further.
Well, then it gets to the second point where if there's no fish here, where are you going to get your fish?
Exactly.
Your fish is going to be imported. Right now, the U.S. imports 90% of the fish.
Now, I don't think people stop. You got to stop. We got to talk about that number. What right now in the United States of America, one of the best technological leaders of the world, we certainly have developed most of the real serious fishing gear and safety gear has been developed in this country, and yet we are not able to feed ourselves fish.
It takes into account all seafood, a biggest proportion of that is shrimp,
of course.
Because we have some shrimp, but the California shrimp doesn't come from California.
Yeah.
It comes from Vietnam and Southeast Asia. So we really are in a bind where how do we feed ourselves when we're importing 90% of that seafood?
Yeah. You talk about a trade deficit or a trade imbalance. But the actual fact of the matter is, as quickly as aquaculture can pop up, there would be some things that we're importing that wouldn't be feasible or financially inviting to try and grow yourself because of labor and land and other costs.
And I think the analog on land is things like the organic, buying organic. It's a lot more expensive than what you would get from a non-organic.
Looks great on paper, but like I said before, we vote with our wallets. So right now, if you take a look at, say, a couple of weeks ago, we had Dean Okamoto from, Nalo Greens talking about, you know, they can't grow enough. I mean, their supply is the demand outstrips the supply. But also families, when they look at a nice, beautiful thing of triple washed Nalo greens and they look at this big bucket of stuff, they're looking at the big bucket of stuff because they're hoping that it's clean, but they can't afford not to buy it.
And I think that's the point of things like aquaculture, things like large scale fisheries. Mm-hmm. It really is that you got to feed a lot of people. And how are you going to feed a lot of people with such small scale type of fisheries? Mm-hmm. I know we always talk about the longline industry and how they're taking all this fish and they're selling all this fish for all this money, but really, can all our local trollers feed the amount of people that we need to feed?
It's highly unlikely. You know, it's ironic that you say that, because over the last few weeks, you know, that we've been doing interviews with the different guys from the Wicked Tuna show. And these guys are absolutely 100% managed. We're managed more than they are. But in actual fact, they have almost a day there where so many fish have been caught and it's over. They pull the plug. And they do that because that fishery has really been analyzed. But doesn't it also show that it's sustainable? Because the ones that they turn back in that are under 73 inches, they're the ones that breed. And the big ones that they take out and we eat.
And at some point, you have one fish that you can catch or two fish that you can catch.
Right.
Who is that going to feed? I mean, one fish might feed just my family.
Yeah.
I mean, what about your family and everybody else's family?
Yeah.
How many people need to go fish to feed everyone?
Yeah, and that's why that show, by the way, it is a total reality show. And it you don't get the real appreciation of it until you've been there. And when you see how many boats are there. See, a lot of us are thinking when we're watching that thing, these seven or eight boats that they follow are catching all the fish that are being caught. But there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of them. And that's why if you're a recreational guy, you can only catch one. You know, and aren't they looking at the same thing in parts of California where there's certain fish where you're only going to be able to catch and bring in one a season?
Well, they have very tight catch limits on some of their fish, like ground fish, the rock fish. You can pull up four, and three of them might be the ones that you aren't in season or you have already and you got to throw it back. And so while we're working on things like annual catch limits, which is a limit for overall how many can be taken out of the fishery every year, these guys are being managed to the person. And some people say that's the better way to do it and might be coming down the pipe one day.
You know, I was actually also impressed at some of the comments made at the Fishers Forum meeting, and that was on the commercial size of fish and also the non-commercial licensing. I know that this year a lot of people thought this was the year that measure was going to go through, and it looks like it's gone off to the side and been shuffled off, and probably for a good reason. I'm not sure that a lot of fishermen thought it was a money grab, but I do feel that, wait a minute, if we stand together and we are counted and we are grouped and we pay for the privilege of being in that group, if we knew that the money that we were paying was going into managing the fishery or helping the enforcement of the scoff laws of the people that break the laws, maybe not such a bad idea. But it's hard to convince people of that.
And sometimes it's really about how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
So like $5 a year, that's one less Starbucks, you know, that you get every year. But even if that money went to pay for something like air conditioning in schools, I don't have an objection to that.
Yeah.
I mean, it's $5 and I miss out on something, but you know, it's going to better.
I remember the pushback, and I know you heard this too. Remember when they came out with that triangular ramp sticker for the trailers? Everybody said, "Oh, this is terrible! This is a big money grab. It's going to go into the slot machine." It went to the ramps.
Yeah, and saw a lot of improvements.
Yeah, and so the proof is in the pudding on that. So I'm going to anticipate, even though there's going to be a lot of people that resent all of a sudden having to stand up and be counted because they're worried for whatever the reason. It is so common. If you guys go to the mainland, and how many of our listeners and even us go to places like Alaska to go fishing? Hey, you're out there in the remote nowhere, in the bushes, and some guy comes up with a badge and says, "May I see your papers, please?" No problem. You show them your papers, right? Everybody's happy.
But you also look at the kind of stuff they get out of paying for their license. Some of these places have nice fishing piers.
Yeah.
You have places
boat
where
ramps.
Places where you that boat ramps that you know aren't falling apart and nails aren't sticking out. But you also have things like where you can clean your fish.
Yeah.
You know, there's cement tables where you go over there and you scale and you gut your fish right there, so you don't have to do it at home.
And you know, when you're able to do that and get into that fishery, and that's why when quite often we talk with Ben Wong and others about getting on the bandwagon and getting on one of those trips. you'll see that you have a tag, and then if you want to do this, you got to get a sticker for that and a sticker for this. And people just do that. And they know that the reason they're doing it, because if you're going to make me follow the rules, you have to show me that you're going over there and catching the guy that's not. Because I would have a tough time with the Wicked Tuna guys doing. I know you did the same way. I got a 72.5-inch fish. I'm taking that fish. I want that fish. But these guys can tell when they look at it not to gaff it, right? It's a short, they call it.
And because when they go back to dock, someone is going to be there.
Oh, yeah,
and they're
all
going to be
over.
Measuring the fish. Yeah. And I think a lot of these other areas are so finely managed. Yeah. And they've felt the pain of having a one-day fishing season or only you can only take two of this fish for the whole year, that they're willing to give the data so that the science can back them up.
Yeah. Okay, now, on that subject, let's also make sure that you know that there are some changes underfoot right now in Washington, and there are some people that are taking a look at monument areas and everything, not just here in Hawaii, but all over the place. And it looks like, I guess, one of the statements coming, or one of the thoughts going forward, Josh, would be, look, we have to take a more proactive approach to this. You talked about even a word, depletion. If you use a word like depleted, that's not gone, you know. So don't we have to sort of be able to find out, all right, what are we willing to let go down so that we can feed ourselves, so that we can eat and be safe and be knowing that what we're eating is safe? That's a big concern, isn't it?
I think a lot of it has to do with what we can sustain ourselves with, and then how much of that can be shared. And it's really a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. It's we take just enough so that what we need and what we can share with our community. And when you look outside of that and you see folks that are just taking tons tons of fish, you kind of question that mentality.
Sure.
But then you know, there's those guys that do that, but then they sell it in the market, and then you have the people who can't go fishing or don't have people that fish that can give them fish. And so
that's what makes us so different, right? One of the first things that local folks feel when they get to the West Coast, let's say that you go out of San Diego or L.A. and you're going to go fishing. Go out to Catalina Island, catch a sailfish. You can bring it home, you can eat it, but you can't bring it to the market and sell it.
Right.
You know, and we, it's natural for us. That's why I was so glad to see that people are coming forward with the information that they did at the Fishers Forum and saying, yeah, I'm not really a commercial fisherman. But, you know, I take care of my neighbor's son mows my grass and I give him fish. Well, that means you're a commercial fisherman. But that's the way we live, right?
Right. Yeah. And because we live on islands, where else are we going to get our food from if Mattson never goes on a strike? That's always in the back of everybody's mind.
Yeah. I got to tell you another thing. When we're talking about this forum, and I want to make sure before we go and wrap things up that Josh and I mentioned this again. Even I think the panelists were amazed to see the number of people that were not apprised, and some of them were not apprised, of exactly how many people are kind of involved in our fishery. I'm not talking just about the guy that's hauling the aqua off the back of an aqua boat, but I'm talking about all the other jobs, some of which aren't even on the water, that all lean on this thing called our fishery.
Yeah, and to have people from the tackle dealers to the fish processors and then the those that sell it or make it in a restaurant. That's
What I got, what about the guy that's teaching piano to the little girl whose dad's a fisherman?
Yeah, because his money comes from the commercial.
I have nothing
fisherman.
To do. Really? It's fish that just paid for that lesson, you know, by the way, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I thought that was a really interesting comment that somebody made.
What I really took away from that was there's needs to be some new ideas and new ways to get the information out.
Mm-hmm.
There was that one young person that said that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Reaching the younger generation. Yeah. So where's all this information on social media?
Well, you know what? I was almost going to say, let me see if you said the same thing. I'm in radio and television, right? And when she said, I don't listen to radio, I'm thinking, what kind of person are you? Everybody has to listen to radio. But they are so used to social media. But I was going to say at the same time, who's the lieutenant governor? Because I think what's happened is these young people are in... They're traveling at the speed of light, and they just get sound bites and little clips in 2 seconds. They don't get the deep picture. And that's something like reading a book instead of reading the Cliff Notes. And that's something like, you know, going on a fishing trip to sea or going to the auction to see how fish are done, or listening to somebody on the radio talk about it like what we do, is, oh, man, you couldn't sit that, I don't think, cute little girl, right? I mean, she was an, I mean, bless her for saying what she said, but it woke me up. I think it woke us all up a little bit.
Yeah, I don't think there are too many that listen to talk radio or that actually watch the news now, even watching the news.
The only time that it happens that we get young listeners is when there's a real problem. If it's a tsunami or earthquake or hurricane or shootings or something, that's when you go to what you consider a source. Unfortunately, and this came up at that meeting as well, everybody on our panel was a recognized either personality, commentator, or journalist. Okay? When you go and find it on the web and a kid says, oh, I just saw it on the internet. It must be true. There's a lot of stuff out there that's not exactly true.
And that's one of the problems is that you're going to have everybody sharing all this information, and it's not always true.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. And when they say, well, give me how many clicks did it get? You know, that's just, well, or how many millions of impressions did that get? I mean, it gets to a point where, and I got it, by the way, the little girl was, no bones about it. She says, I don't know what everybody else does, but we don't listen to the radio. And I said, okay, but when you said the same thing, they don't watch TV either.
Yeah, and they don't read the newspaper.
Yeah, and so that means like we have a whole bunch of people that are just walking around believing what other people are telling them instead of finding out for themselves.
Well, you got a whole generation of people that judges on what other people think, who has the most likes, how many, what are the reviews on Yelp? These people are ingrained with that. And
I was talking to a guy in the restaurant business who serves some of the freshest fish in Hawaii. And he got a bad review on Yelp, and he was so disgusted because it wasn't even a bad review. It was somebody who he let go, who was not a good employee, and their brother got so mad at him that the brother starts firing off these bad reviews about how bad the restaurant is. He'd never even been there.
And that's the kind of thing that people see.
Okay, now if you want to see more about this, what sort of information has been disseminated? What sort of stuff is on WPCouncil.org about this meeting? Got some good wrap-ups and stuff?
Yeah, so we have a couple of stories up on WPCouncil.org, and you can always send us an email if you want to know more, and hopefully we'll be able to get the video of it done and out there.
Yeah,
on
I saw
YouTube
that.
Soon.
Yeah, that's right. Watch for us on YouTube, and that way you can see some of the behind the scenes guys. So it's pretty interesting. Remember, we want you to go and catch fish. Everybody wants you to catch and eat fish. We want you to be safe about it. And so we want to thank everybody from far and wide for coming and attending that Fishers Forum. If you weren't there last time, we'll give you plenty of warning about next time. And remember what Josh just said. If you want to hear something on the program, you can go to WPCouncil.org and send them an email, or you can drop me one, themikebuckshow@gmail.com. Have a great rest of the weekend, everybody. Go catch some fish and go eat some fish and go feed the family. Until next time, aloha.